Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just wrapped up a quick two-game set with the Atlanta Braves, splitting that series, winning one game, losing the other. They now fall back to 500 on the season at 31-31, and they currently are tied for third place in the American League East with the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to bug me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me tonight on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm all right. Surprised by the split, so medium, I guess. You can find me on Twitter at JTShill20.
Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you doing?
Not too shabby. I guess I'm probably a little more annoyed than Jeremy, so I'm medium rare. But you can find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB, the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Find us on Instagram. And also, a bit of breaking news. We are diving into the kind of the blogging sector of things. We started a Substack. So if you just search Bastards of Boston Substack, you should be able to find us. And it's not going to be your traditional article thing. We're going to act as a panel based on whatever the topic of the day is. The very first one, which should be live not long after we finish recording this, is going to be what we expect with Juan Soto and his long-term future. Does he stay in New York? Does New York pass on him? And so it's going to be a panel thing with short statements from all of us, and should be good.
Absolutely. Yeah, keep an eye out for that. Pretty good first topic there, too, talking about one of the biggest superstars in baseball who I think is going to have a very interesting offseason this winter. So definitely keep an eye out for that. I should correct myself, by the way, just quickly. We are actually tied with the Tampa Bay Rays for third place. The Blue Jays, of course, are still somewhat shockingly in last place in the American League East, down there at 28-32. So Red Sox back at 500 yet again, hanging in there a little bit, but you know, it's kind of those weird, you know, weird two game set. It was a quick one. You faced a rookie pitcher for Atlanta who's been struggling. You teed off on him. But other than that, a typical kind of two games for the Red Sox. They've got a brutal stretch coming up after this weekend. They got the lowly White Sox, but after that, it's a gauntlet. And we all know what the month of June, what that schedule looks like. So, Jeremy, I'll start with you. After these two games and heading into Chicago this weekend, how do you feel about the team? How do you feel about, again, being back at 500? Do you feel any differently about them, or do you think it's just kind of same old, same old?
Yeah, I mean, since we last spoke, they went 3-3. They split a four-game set and a two-game set. I described it as being a pancake in a frying pan, just being flipped up over and over. I just was flipped six more times. I mean, I literally have nothing to add from what I said last week. I mean, it's at this point where I almost want them to just go in a direction. I'm starting not to care which way. I say that tongue-in-cheek. Obviously, I want them to win. In part because I'm doing this podcast and I watch a lot of baseball, and if they go the wrong way, it's going to be just a brutal next 60 to 90 days as we get towards football. But, you know, maybe as we get to through your guys' temperature check, I'll have a few more comments on why I think they're just stuck in a rut. I think Cutter Crawford might be one of those reasons. I think we're going to talk about him today. But we have a spot in the rotation that's not giving us a chance to win, and that's causing the inability to string games together. And it's just extremely frustrating. I unfortunately think that's what they are, and that's what they're going to continue to be. I think that's what their talent is. I think it's what is reflective of ownership's effort in the offseason through Breslow. So, I mean, we are what we are at this point, 31-31. We've got 100 games left. I assume we're going to win 50 and lose 50.
Jeremy, how are you feeling right now?
Or Terry.
Oh, sorry, Terry, how are you feeling right now?
Better
looking
guy.
That's kind of a tricky spot to put me in.
I know, yeah. Do it all over again.
So, it was a split, you know, so statistically we're not worse than we were at the start of the series, but I do feel like we are worse because I'm a little bit more pessimistic about starting pitching, as Jeremy was alluding to. And when you look at that first game and you're down quick, you know, 6-3 by the fourth or fifth inning, you don't have the offense to climb back into that. So this team is just messed up. And O'Neill came back today. We're not really going to discuss him, but he had a couple of hits, which looks nice, but I'm still not optimistic that he's going to, you know, have this really productive last, you know, 3 or 4 months. Yoshida's coming back. I don't feel great about that. You know, so I just, even though it was a split, I don't feel any better at all, you know, versus where I was at the start of the week.
Yeah, it's, again, the two games, it's tough to really feel any different about them because game one, you're going up against Max Fried, so you're just hoping for the best. And your starter, you know, craps the bed and doesn't give you a chance to win that game because you actually touched him up for 3 runs, which against a guy like Max Fried, with this offense, with that many pieces missing, is pretty good. But it wasn't enough. And then game two, you're going up against a rookie who, you know, they promoted from Double A. He's pitching well down there, but he's been getting smacked ever since he came up to the big leagues. He's not ready. So, yeah, you touched him up. You got to him. That's great. But you basically faced a Double A pitcher in game two. So, yeah, it's nice to feel good about the win. You won, you know, 9-0. Pivetta was lights out. But I don't know. It's hard to give you a ton of credit for that game because, again, you were facing a minor leaguer. So I still feel the same about them. I think that this is what they do. They beat up against bad competition. Hopefully they do more of that this weekend against Chicago. And then they face the elite teams in the league and they get their lips ripped off. So that's why they're 31-31. They're a 500 team. It's not a horrible thing. They're not in the basement. They're not underperforming like the Blue Jays are, or like the Astros are. But that's just kind of who you are. You're just an okay average team with a very average roster. And it's even, you know, below average now with the amount of guys that are on the IL. So yeah, you get Tyler O'Neill back, but you lose Willy Abreu. That's kind of a worse trade-off if you ask me. So it's one of those things where the injuries certainly haven't helped, but you're also seeing why the roster construction was such a flaw to begin with, because you have all these injuries and you get some no-names going into that lineup that really aren't doing much for you, and your rotation's starting to slip too. So it's who they are.
Man, you guys are just pessimistic coming off splitting the series. We probably didn't have any business splitting. You guys want to focus on Crawford, go for it. I'd say Pivetta was pretty good today, and we found a way to get to 9 runs. I don't care who the arm is. With some retreads, some, you know, my career minor leaguer in Jamie Westbrook. You guys want to take that as a negative. If you want to talk about just the Braves series, I was talking about the whole week since we all last spoke. I mean, I don't know how you can't come out of this somewhat positive. The way Devers is swinging the bat, you get O'Neill back. I like to look at O'Neill as regressing, or not regressing, increasing back to the mean. He was never going to be as good as he was before the concussion. I don't believe he's going to be as bad as he was since. I think, and I mentioned this last week, I think that the trip to the IL or the trip back to Boston to get him away from baseball was somewhat deliberate. And he comes back and he goes 2-for-4. And Terry just is like, let's put a negative spin on 2-for-4 with an RBI today. So, I mean, if we're going to, we can do that today. But you might get pushback from me, at least as to the Braves series.
That's fair.
I mean, I thought Jason hit the nail on the head. You had a double-A pitcher today. They had one foot in Fenway Park, their other foot on the tarmac to get the hell out of Fenway. It just, they, you know, Matt Olson not having a great series. Murphy left last night's game with an injury. They don't have Acuna. I thought something else happened to one of their players as well, but I just, yeah, I mean, we got a cupcake series this weekend before it gets real again. So.
Yep, absolutely. And even though it was just two games, there was plenty to take away from those 2 days, and including an old friend returning to Fenway Park. So we're going to start with that. A little bit of a different scenario here. We usually give you a top or bottom five, but 2 games, kind of hard to glean a whole lot from that. So we're just giving you our top five, just observations from those 2 games. And Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. Take it away. Who's number five?
Yeah, so being it's an observational show, one observation that was kind of painful and borderline shocking was Chris Sale came back to Fenway for the first time since last season. They played a tribute video in between innings. I think it was in between the first or second, maybe the second or third. I had to listen to the games, by the way, because I'm in the Atlanta market, so I couldn't watch them. So I didn't get the visuals, but by all accounts, it was a very awkwardly silent response to Chris Sale coming back to Fenway. And just one or two nights before that, Reese Hoskins returned to Philadelphia for the first time. He's now with the Milwaukee Brewers. And, you know, even though he's not going to get any glory for what they're doing this year, he was a big part of what got them here. A power hitting first baseman, endeared himself to the city. He got a full minute long standing ovation. Kids in the stands were crying, and it was this very, you know, special, surreal moment for Hoskins. And then, you know, like I said, a night or two later, Chris Sale comes back to Fenway, and the most iconic moment of the 2018 World Series is him striking out Manny Machado, and then him and Christian Vasquez embracing, you know, after that final out. That's the clip that gets played over and over and over again about 2018. And arguably, Chris Sale did more for the Red Sox in just those couple of years than Hoskins did for a bunch of years before free agency. So it's just, it was crazy. And the Sale era was kind of uncomfortable. In 2017, he broke down. In 2018, I thought he would break down. He did end up breaking down. And then after that, it was like, well, he's just a ticking time bomb from here out. He's going to get hurt. Some of that was bad luck. Some of it was because he didn't know how to ride a bicycle. But it's just, I'm just surprised. I know I was in the minority in how I felt towards Sale. He was still wildly popular with the fan base for much of his tenure, but it's a huge indictment on this team, where we are now versus where we came from. And I think the very lukewarm reaction to Chris Sale kind of speaks to that.
So the comparison to Reese Hoskins is tough because he came up as a Philly. He grew as a Philly. Didn't his tenure end there with a pretty bad injury, so he didn't even get to finish it out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like he's on a good Milwaukee team, so it's not like he's in a terrible situation. And then he comes back, And when he comes back, the Phillies are maybe the best team in baseball. They bang out the link, or the, I think the link's the football field. They bang out that stadium every night. They feel good about their team. They feel good about their ownership. You know, they're on the brink of a World Series run here, and you bring back a returning player, you're going to get some of the energy they give the regular team. So if we liken the situation to Sale, Nesson's ratings are at an all-time low. Tony Maserati brings it up on 98.5 at the 2 p.m. show every day. It's an absolute dumpster fire. No one's watching. The people that are going to the games are there for the novelty of it or there for the away team. There's no buzz in the building. There's more empty seats than I ever recall as a Red Sox fan. I've been watching the team for probably since I was like seven, so 33 years. I thought the energy towards Sale from what I saw of it was kind of at par with the energy the crowd's been giving the Red Sox anyways. You know, and then as to Sale himself, he came up in a different organization. We acquired him from the White Sox. He broke the strikeout record. And then after that, it was just bandage after bandage to try to keep him healthy for important innings at the end of the year, which manifested itself when he gets the punch out on Manny Machado to win the 18 World Series. So it's a confluence of a number of factors why it was underwhelming. But I think the biggest reason why it was is because the team's underwhelming and the crowd's energy and effort on the on-field product is poor, and it just manifested itself. You know, so that's my take on it.
It's still, though, a major indictment on what's gotten us here and the failures and...
Well, I didn't say that directly. Right. But yeah, we're dumpster fire. We're starting that game. We started Jamie Westbrook, who 11 years in the minors has got a cool nickname. It's easy got to root for, but I mean, it's a cool story here and now, but we're not going to still be talking about him in a couple of weeks. I mean, Cooper's in the lineup with that day, Dahlbach's back in the lineup that day. You know, I mean, Valdez is back now, as it were. He's been pretty good. I mean, look at this lineup they put out there. And, you know, you're already down 2-0 because Crawford can't get out of his own way right now. And actually, it was more, we'll talk about it in a minute, but Crawford was screwed again by the defense. So, I mean, it is. It's an indictment on everything. It's where the product is, you know?
Well, first of all, they did it too early. Because they did it after the full first inning, I believe, and Red Sox fans have slowly morphed into Miami fans, where they only show up halfway through the game. They're not there for first pitch anymore. They're still down at Cask and Flagon ripping shots because they don't really want to go to the game, but they got tickets from their uncle or something. They're like, oh, I guess we should traipse on over and go see this crap bag outfit and see what they're doing today. So they did it too early, first of all, because the stadium was still half empty. And I, you know, usually I would blame O'Brien and Nesson for trying to, you know, explain this away, but I think they may have actually been correct in saying that the stadium was half full of Braves fans. Braves fans do travel. They do tend to come up to Boston when the Braves come up here. So there was a lot of Braves fans in the stands. So they're kind of looking at it going, well, okay, he's with us now, but we don't care about this. I think just Red Sox fans are so apathetic right now. I mean, half the fan base spends more time watching Worcester and Portland than they do the major league team, because that's all they care about is the big three and all those guys. They don't really watch the major league team anymore. The major league product kind of sucks. And it'd be one thing if, you know, you traded Chris Sale, you got Vaughn Grissom back. It'd be one thing if Vaughn Grissom was in your lineup every day and he was, you know, really performing well and he was, you know, hitting towards the top of your order. Then I think Red Sox fans would be a little more like, yeah, okay, we can appreciate what Sale did because we got something good in return. Where's Vaughn Grissom now? He's on the IL again. And he really just hasn't shown you anything yet since he's gotten here. So that's another thing too, where fans are in the stands going, all right, this is nice. Who do we get for him again? Oh, that Grissom kid. Yeah. He's played like what, 6 games and is hurt again. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. I think that's just the whole state of the fan base and the state of the franchise right now. It's just kind of like, all right, whatever. Oh, they're down 2-0 because Crawford's, you know, getting his brains beat in again. Oh, shocking. Okay. Whatever. Let's go to the Bud Deck and, you know, just chill out there. Like, fans are just apathetic because ownership's apathetic, and it's all trickle down effects. So part of it too is that you have to remember we're not the only ones who are frustrated by the end of Chris Sale's tenure here. There were a lot of Red Sox fans that were ready for that guy to go. The day that the trade went down, just scrolling through Twitter, so many Red Sox fans are saying, you know what? It was time. It was time. There were select few that were losing their minds, you know, select few of the Chris Sale, you know, loyalists who are like, what the hell are we doing? This is stupid. But for the most part, most Red Sox fans are saying, yeah, it's time. It's time to move on. You know, the last couple of years have been a joke. This guy can't stay healthy. At least he got a young kid back in return. Fine. So I think for all those reasons, that's why he got a lukewarm reception for his tribute video. The tribute video kind of sucked too. Let's also throw that out there. Like, I don't know who put that together, if it was Nesson or the Red Sox themselves, but like, I've seen much better tribute videos for guys who were here for like half a season. Like, I'm pretty sure Adrian Beltre may have gotten a better tribute than Chris Sale did. So the tribute video did kind of suck, but I think it's just he got a lukewarm response because fans were so lukewarm and almost down on him towards the end, and they were ready to move on. So it's too bad for him. I feel a little bad, but like, that's the way it went. Just it was a rough end of his tenure, and things have not gotten all that much better since he left. So fans are just kind of in a who cares kind of state.
The thing too is that a lot of the goodwill he built up early on vanished after the contract because he provided nothing in the face of a big salary number, you know, and that was more a bad decision to give a broken down player a big deal than anything. I mean, he would be stupid not to take the money, especially given the circumstances. But I think a lot of us, and myself might be included in this, it's like as much positive that came from the World Series and the strikeout record was done away well before he was traded because he just did not perform anywhere near the $30 million a year contract.
And yeah, like you can say he helped us win 2018. That's true. He helped. Was he like a key part of that season though? Not in the second half. And yeah, he gets the punch out of Machado. That's like the iconic moment that people remember because it was the last out. But really, Chris Sale didn't help you. He wasn't instrumental in you winning. His first few dominant seasons, you didn't really win much. And then the year you won the World Series, he was kind of a relief pitcher at that point because that's all he could really do. So I think, you know, to Jeremy's point, like that much money, that long of a contract, and you were a glorified reliever coming out of the bullpen in 2018. So, you know, at least David Price, for as much of an a-hole, a flaming a-hole as that guy was, he really did help you win a World Series. He was instrumental in helping you win, you know, the one year where he had his head out of his ass. So that's sort of the difference. So yeah, that's a big part of it too. He just never lived up to the contract. So lukewarm reception, you know, a little bit awkward, a little bit of an awkward moment, but I think it was all justified. I think it's just the state of the franchise right now. So with that, we'll move on to number four on our list of five observations here. And we're going to go with two guys who were recently called up, added to your active roster this week. An old friend, Bobby Dalbec. Yes, he's back. He is back. Once again, you know, the minor league king has returned. And also this Jamie Westbrook, who Jeremy mentioned before, career minor leaguer, 28 years old. They call him the barrel man down in the minors because he does hit pretty well down in the minors. But once again, it's just sort of shows you the state of this roster. This is who you're plugging into your lineup, into your everyday lineup against teams like the Braves. This is, and injuries are a big part of it. I get that, but this is how bad your depth can be. And I know that you've got some studs down there that, you know, they don't want to add to the active roster yet. They don't want to quote unquote start the clock. They don't want to rush anything. I get that. But this is what you got. Two 28-year-olds who basically they're just 4A players. They can only perform in the minors, and this is what you're playing every day. And I'm sorry, Bobby Dalbec playing right field. Can we not do that? Can we just not do that? That was, you know, I know Maz pissed off a lot of people when he said, oh, look at how bad of a route he took. Well, he's right. he was lucky the ball went over the fence, because otherwise we'd be looking at that going, he looks worse than Christian Arroyo did when they put him out there. I mean, it's just – so, again, it's positionless baseball. They've got nothing but DHs and nothing but journeyman minor leaguers to plug into their lineup when guys go down. It's just an awful – again, just an a nod to this awful roster construction. So I'm not bagging on the guys. I'm glad Westbrook got his first hit. That was a good moment for him. I know he had the family in the stands last couple of games, so – happy for him. But again, it's just, this is what you've resorted to. Like, I get injuries, but man, this is the best you can do is these guys. And at some point, especially with this coming schedule, it's going to catch up with them, because it's not going to be good enough. And we're going to be sitting here going, we've got Bobby Dalbec hitting fifth and playing right field. What the hell is this? So it's just bad signs all around. Jeremy, what do you think of these two guys?
I want to give you an A+ on the ricochet shot at Christian Arroyo out of the blue. Completely unnecessary, but I can support it and I love it. Didn't expect Christian Arroyo to be a topic tonight, but that was a nice move. Look, I root for these players. I think the barrel man thing, I know a lot of people think that's cheesy and Twitter runs with it. And, you know, he put a good swing on the ball on his first at bat up with the club. He lined a ball. I'd assume that was 100 mile an hour off the bat type of swing right at the center fielder, hit it well, got his first major league hit. It's always a cool moment, especially when you see a guy that's been struggling in the minor, not struggling, but, you know, kind of toiling in the minors. I've said this about Dalbec. I root for the guy. The year he hit 20 home runs, I thought he was going to be a big leaguer. I thought he could have been part of the future or at least an asset to get some stuff back. And the hit he had was an inside out swing where he jammed himself like a 47-year-old trying to play slow pitch softball. Like it was a terrible swing. It wound up being a big hit and he got an RBI on it. But I don't disagree with you. Every time I'm on this podcast, I go into the organization, I go into the depth, I go into the effort they've put to build the big league club, the protection of their, you know, minor leaguers that they see having a future. I agree. You should not start the clock. You absolutely should not start the clock on those guys. That is the right move. So guys like Westbrook are going to get a shot. Dahlbeck's going to continue to be on the 40 man and be there for organizational depth because you don't have anything else. And I mean, I think you said it pretty succinctly. It's kind of a state of the union here. This is what we get once we have, you know, they're not even key. Like Grissom's not a key ish injury, right? We're not getting anything from the player anyway. So it's not even a key injury. I can't imagine what's going to happen if like Houck goes on the 15 with like shoulder inflammation and Devers has to go on the IL for like a twisted knee. I mean, that's where we're really going to be like, wow. So right now to me, you're just plugging in a bunch of different players that are all kind of in the mix to not be here, hopefully in 3 years, once they, you know, accelerate to what would hopefully be a winning big league club. So, you know, at the risk of saying the same stuff over and over again, I agree with you.
Terry.
In 2022, I was thinking to myself, no way will Dalbec be here in 2024 as he makes a start in right field. So here's what pisses me off the most about Dalbec and especially Westbrook here. And it's another reason I'm not going to miss Alex Cora after this year. In what world does a guy who's never had a major league at bat end up protecting Rafi Devers in the five hole? What sense does that make? You can't even make that up. If I said 2 weeks ago, Cora's going to put some guy we've never heard of in the five hole who's never had a major league at bat, and he's going to protect Rafi Devers, and we're going to, with a straight face, we're going to tell people we're trying to win this game. That's nuts to me. Go back to the finale of the Tiger series on Sunday. Willier Abreu got pinch hit for this guy because it was a lefty who wasn't locating. That's unacceptable to me too. And this is the season where Willy Abreu has to learn how to hit lefties. And he's hitting, I think, around 200 against them. Not great. But this is insane. Like, this is a level of insanity I never thought was possible. Could you imagine Terry Francona putting him in to protect David Ortiz? Like, that's just insane to me. And
no, but Terry Francona was never dealt a roster like this.
True. Absolutely. Devers is going to Cooperstown on the first ballot. Unless he goes like full out Pablo Sandoval in the next couple of years. He's going to Cooperstown on the first ballot. And so, yeah. And Christian Arroyo, it didn't work out well. I wanted it to work out well so bad. I always had optimism for that guy. Love the energy, the intensity. Got hurt.
Terry, look who was hitting behind Westbrook, though, right? Look who was hitting behind Westbrook in that lineup.
Cooper.
So Westbrook hit fifth, Cooper sixth, Dahlbeck seventh, Dom Smith eighth, and Rafaela, who, by the way, is hitting 202 or 203. He was 0 for 7. So there was no one else that was going to be in the lineup that could even do the job. And if it was any one of those players, Terry, your take would have been the exact same thing. It would have just been aimed at a different player. The only thing I think he could have done is break up the righties and Ref Snyder and Wong and put Devers 3 and then Wong 4, Ref Snyder 4, something like that. So I agree with you. I think there could have been a minor adjustment, break up the two righties at the top of the lineup and put Devers in between them. Also would potentially help you with matchups later in the game, but it wasn't good.
I honestly probably would have put Rafaela in that spot. That would have been better to me than a guy who's never had a major league at bat. Hamilton's a lefty, correct?
He is, yes.
He is. So that wouldn't have been viable, but I would have put Devers.
Did hit the ball hard. I mean, he hit the ball hard. But I get your point. Arguing against myself.
I would have put Devers third and then Wong fourth. Like, there's a million just ways to. Oh, did you? My bad. I was distracted by the David Hamilton thing. But anyway, I can't. It's just the sad state of where we're at, and. And by the way, I was looking for some Cutter Crawford stuff because he's going to be my guy shortly. But Alex Spear tweets out that Westbrook got a wild ovation for the one hit that he did get, and then Chris Sale gets nothing. But anyway,
everybody loves the lovable underdog, my friend.
Yeah,
sure do. We got our one of our first when hosts aren't listening there. That was good. So.
Yeah, well, you beat me to it because 98.5 does that. I always find it funny.
Yeah,
that was definitely a when hosts aren't listening.
I'm Mr. ADD, so
All right. Worse. Well, we will move on from some of the underperforming members of our lineup to someone who is starting to surprise us a little bit. So Jeremy, who do we got coming in at number 3?
Dominic Smith. He's surprising me in two directions. He's starting to hit and he's starting to not field. So let me get the pessimistic stuff out of the way. That second inning was trash. And it keeps happening to Crawford. So Crawford goes 6-5 hits, 6 earned, only 4 of them, 6 runs, only 4 of them earned. He just boots a hip-high ground ball. It was pure laziness. If you shuffle one step to your right, even if your glove is in a bad position like his was, the ball hits you in the belt, drops to the ground, you flip it to the pitcher, you get the out. The technique, lazy feet. When you boot a ball, it needs to be because it stays down, not because it comes up. I mean, just terrible, terrible all around. And I was praising him last time I was on this podcast about how well he was playing defensively. But that was not the worst play. We have a right-handed batter up, and so he's essentially playing in the hole. So he's halfway down the baseline already. Let's say 25, 30 feet off the bag. The ball's hit basically right at the second baseman, who I think was Westbrook on the play. Dom Smith jab steps like he's going to make a play on the ball, hit at where a natural second baseman would be standing. What are you doing, dude? What are you doing? Then he actually is quick enough to get back to the bag and just doesn't catch the ball. So it counts as one error, but there were two completely miscalculated efforts on that one play. You can't have it at first base if you're hitting 203. You can't. Now, offensively, the guy's starting to hit. He's 3-for-7. On Tuesdays, 1-for-4, hits the home run, so he scores a run and gets an RBI. And then on Wednesday, he's 2-for-3 with another RBI. Also has a double, so he has two extra base hits in the series, which I'll have a comment on that in a second. And he also walks. So, I mean, he did a little bit of everything except for play defense. You know, so in that first game, a couple of notes. Every person in the starting lineup struck out. Pathetic. I understand the pitcher's a good pitcher. That is pathetic. One extra base hit, pathetic. And Smith has two errors, which set you back right away, pathetic. As it were, he rebounded. I think he hit the home run in the third, so he comes back from the mental lapses defensively and hits a home run. So it was kind of a little bit of everything from Dom Smith in this two-game set. So, you know, if we were doing both columns and up and a down, I think he could potentially be in both.
I don't have a ton to add. It sucks that he's our first baseman, but it sucks that there's four other guys on the roster before him. I will say this, in the last, I meant to have the last 2 weeks up. In the last 2 weeks, he's hit two home runs, drove in seven. Jeremy says he's walking more. He is, in fact, walking more. He has 9 walks in the last 2 weeks. Devers is the next closest at 6. In that two-week span where he's heated up, he's hitting .256 with a .396 on base. So suddenly he's going from scrap heap guy to somewhat serviceable. And it's not ideal, but Agreed. We've got bigger problems.
So. At least we're getting something.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about the first base combo a week ago, and nothing was happening. So basically, he must have been listening to our podcast and turned it up a little bit.
Well, and I'll say this. It's a good thing you are getting something because, you know, it was reported this week that Casas is still experiencing pain when he just rotates his body. So he still isn't anywhere close to picking up a bat and swinging yet. So you're probably looking at late July.
You might have missed his in-game interview because he said he was going to be swinging at the end of this week.
Okay. I mean, so I did catch the interview, and he admitted, he said, look, it's one of those things where as soon as I try and do something, I might experience pain, and then I got to rest for another couple of days. So the hope is that if he is going to pick up a bat this week, later or at the end of the week, that he feels good doing it. Because as soon as he experiences any sort of pain, they're going to shut him right back down again. So, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think Dom Smith is doing just fine. The defensive mistakes were bad. I agree. They were atrocious and kind of shocking because his whole career, when he's playing first base, he hasn't been a great defender, but he's been solid. He's been mostly mistake-free. You know, his defensive numbers at first base are pretty good throughout his whole career. I mean, last year with the Nationals, he had a +5 defensive run save there, and he played 153 games at first base for them. So, and he was productive. You know, he hit .250, a little bit of power, like nothing crazy. But if that's what he can give you, you know, close to .250, a little bit of pop, and he can play a solid first base, you know, I think at that point, you sort of say bye-bye to Garrett Cooper and you just give Dom Smith the job until Casas is ready because he can hit lefties too. This year, he's struggling a little bit. He's only hitting .182 off of them, but he's had a slow start offensively anyway. For his career, he's actually a .253 hitter against lefties, and he's actually got a higher career batting average against lefties than he does righties. So he can hit both arms. So there's no reason why you can't just play him every day at first base, especially if his bat is starting to heat up and he's starting to feel it. Because I'm sorry, Garrett Cooper looks like he doesn't have anything left. That guy looks lost at the plate. The strikeouts look atrocious. Defensively, I don't think he's any better than Cooper. He's probably worse, actually. Or it's Smith. So I think Smith is the way to go forward here. Just give him the first base job until Costas is ready to come back, because the bat's heating up. Again, he's not going to be an all-star for you, but can he return to what he did with the Nationals last year, give you 250 with a little bit of pop? That's fine. That's all you need. It's better than having Bobby Dalbec play there. It's better than having a guy like Jamie Westbrook play there. So, you know, at least he can play the position. He can play it competently for the most part when his, you know, he's got his head screwed on straight. And I think that he, you know, he took accountability for that. He said, look, I'm the reason we lost the game. I can't be doing that. He knows that he has to be better than that. So I think Smith is starting to turn some heads a little bit here. I think he was actually a sneaky good pickup for you. And look, hopefully Costas is on the mend. Hopefully when he does start swinging, if that is later this week, that he feels good doing it and doesn't experience pain and he can start to make his way back. But I think Dom Smith has earned himself a spot on this roster, even when Costas does return, because I'd much rather have Smith as a platoon option than Bobby Dalbec, you know, in terms of that first base position, maybe a DH every now and then. So all in all, not bad. The errors were bad for sure, but the bat's heating up, and I don't think you're going to see him be that bad defensively going forward. I think he's pretty solid, and I think he'll do the job.
I like the sentiment, but it doesn't make sense with him being a left-handed bat like Costas. I think the compliment to Costas is going to be a right-handed hitter, just as an aside.
Sure. It's just that the two right-handers that you have for that position both really suck with Cooper and Dalbec. Now, if Cooper starts to turn around, yeah, okay, sure, we can have that discussion, but I don't know. I just think it's really hard. I mean, what do you do with Dom Smith when Costas comes back? You can't send him down. Like, it's just, they're going to have a hard decision to make there.
That's what I was wondering. Has he played any outfield at all in his career or no?
He has, and it's not good. Okay. So, because I was looking up his defensive numbers, that the Mets tried to put him in left field for a little bit, and they ruined his career by doing it. He cannot play left field. He's not that type of guy.
Mets have a habit of doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. the Mets tried and they screwed him up. The Nationals got him and they're like, you're playing first base for all 153. You're not going anywhere else. I think he played DH like one or two games for them. That was it. So yeah, they've tried the left field experiment with him when he was younger and it was a disaster.
I guess the only other thing you could do is you could somewhat platoon him and Casas at first base, and the other one can DH on the odd games, and that could be a creative way on how to get them both in the lineup.
It's tough though, and you know, it's why it's a good point that Jeremy brought up, because Yoshida is going to start a rehab assignment.
Yeah, you're right. So that screws it all up.
That's another lefty bat you got coming back. So I don't know. I'm not sure what becomes of Dom Smith after Costas and Yoshida get back, but at least for now.
Well, good for the player. Good for the player for putting something on tape and making himself available to other teams. And he could be a guy where you get a, you know, if he's not going to be here, you go get a low end prospect for him and see if something works out in 3 to 4 years with that type of player.
Or he could he's
at least in the last 10 days, he's created some value for himself.
He could be the second or third piece in a bigger package as well. But
yeah, fair.
Yeah, you could include him in a Kenley Jansen trade or something like that. You know, who knows? So.
Remember the year? Well, technically, I guess it was the year Dombrowski got here, which was in like August of 15. And they just told Hanley Ramirez to go home. They're like, just go home. And then we'll figure it out this winter. That's what I want to happen to Yoshida. But it is what it is.
Not gonna happen, Terry.
You're gonna get all these double play balls from him. You know he's gonna ground him to second. It's gonna be brutal.
They're up to Cora. I'm sure he'd love to do that, but I don't think it's gonna happen. So with that, we'll move from the lineup to our starting rotation. Someone particularly shined from the starting rotation. Jeremy, who's coming in at number 2.
Pivetta. Seven innings, one hit, obviously no runs, no earned runs, two walks, nine Ks on 91 pitches, lowers his ERA to 3.4, and his whip is down to 0.94. And he's becoming more and more reliable. Since his May 25th start against Milwaukee, where he went 3 1/3, seven hits, five run, all earned, and his ERA ballooned to 4.2, he's quickly found a stride again. He 5 1/3 last outing against Detroit, two runs. And then today he really had full command. I love his mindset. He just has this competitive look on his face, and he competes as hard as anybody does in the rotation. And the team responded behind him today by hitting, which they don't do for everybody else. So it's very encouraging, especially where you have a guy like Crawford who's regressed. So, you know, maybe Pivetta steps up in that role behind Houck and provides you two legitimate chances to win out of each 5 days. So really encouraged by Pivetta. A guy who last year wound up pitching out of the bullpen and really was solid for you. I think he's been a pretty good Red Sox overall. So encouraged, and it looks like maybe Pivetta will have a more important role moving forward, trying to make sure we win enough games to stay afloat.
Terry.
I have a conspiracy theory. Alex Anthopoulos called over to Breslow and said, "Hey, we'll give you the game today, but you got to trade us Pivetta in July." Kidding.
That's just Terry trying to get my.
If any team needs
get me
Nick
going a little bit,
if any team needs Nick Pivetta, it is the Atlanta Braves. I mean, they're just a Chris Sale injury away from being completely effed.
There's a lot of teams that would take a guy like Pivetta.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But I think the Braves need him more than most. But so, couple things here. First of all, I mean, Pivetta's your clear number two at this point. And sometimes, I mean, you could make a case for number one because his outings are dominant at times. Just completely nasty, completely shuts the other team down. Houck is extremely effective, but he just doesn't have that exclamation point on some of his starts like Pivetta has. So, in Houck's defense, he doesn't get lit up every fourth or fifth game like Pivetta does. But Pivetta just was absolutely dominant. I wonder Houck would have to have more strikeouts because Pivetta missed a little bit of time there. But so often, Pivetta's like 8 to 10 strikeouts each start and just completely, like I said, dominant. The other thing that's interesting to me, Merlone pointed this out, and again, I'm in the Atlanta market, so I was relegated to listening on WEEI. He's 49% fastballs on the year, which is the highest of any Red Sox starter. The Andrew Bailey program is that less fastballs, more sweepers and changeups. But since Pivetta's come back, he's actually 65% fastballs. So he's getting to be more and more reliant on that. And part of the reason, too, could be, coming off of a forearm strain, the sweepers and stuff, he may be a little hesitant to throw those because they can be tough on your forearms. So I just thought those were interesting. I don't think he's going to be here in a couple months, so enjoy him while you have him. As Jeremy said, there's probably at least 8 teams that could use him, and I think we're going to get a decent trade package in return for him because I think the demand is going to be so high.
I mean, I'm glad that he's using more of his fastball since he came back from the IL. He's got a plus fastball, and he has pretty much his whole career. So, he might as well use it. And I just love his approach. He's got the mentality of Chris Sale without the injuries. Because he's got that sort of dog in him, like he gets fired up. And, he's the guy on the mound. You want either him or Houck for like a quote-unquote stopper you know, when you're on kind of a losing streak, or, you know, you're just, things aren't really going your way. I think this is a perfect game for him, because like with the Abreu injury, with, you know, guys still being on the shelf, you got a tough schedule ahead of you. You're facing an Atlanta team. You already dropped game one, which was frustrating. For him to be on the mound and just going straight after this lineup and really dominating them, I think that's something that this team desperately needs to see. The Ozuna bat was a tone setter. It really was. I mean, you know, Marcell Ozuna is having a phenomenal season. He hits pretty well against Pivetta. Three straight fastballs. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. Struck him out. I mean, that's, you know, that's just Pivetta doing his thing. Being like, yeah, I should set him up with a fastball and then, you know, use the sweeper, but screw that. I'm throwing 95, 96, and then 96 up, and I'm going to get him to chase. And that's what he did. So I just like that approach. I like that he goes right at hitters. Now, sometimes it gets him in trouble, and he does have those starts where he gets lit up a little bit, and that can be frustrating. But this guy is still super valuable to your rotation. You know, the injury was unfortunate, but otherwise, he's good for 6-7 innings every outing. He's going to get his punch outs. He's, you know, he doesn't put too many guys on base either. So, you know, that's why his whip is so low. He is. He's absolutely your number two right now. It'll suck if they have to trade him in, you know, a month and a half or whatever. But, you know, that's kind of the, where your team is at right now. And if you do get, you know, a really good offer in return, I think it's hard to say no, because he's been here a while. And I think you've gotten the most out of Nick Pivetta that you could have possibly asked for. I mean, you got him for a song to begin with. You got him for two pitchers that are out of baseball now. So the trade was an absolute dynamite win. You've gotten so many innings, so many starts out of him. I think at this point, as good as he is and as much as it would suck to see him go, if a team really needs a starter, if Atlanta comes to you and says, yeah, we want Nick Pivetta, with their pipeline and the amount of talent they have, if they give you a pretty good offer, it'd be hard to say no. Now, then again, you know, conspiracy theorists, Red Sox fans might say, well, they're the same people who trade Yvonne Grissom. So be careful there. But I'm sure there'll be plenty of teams that are going to need an extra starter, you know, down the road here. And they're going to be calling about Nick Pivetta. And I hope Breslow is, you know, open-minded about it, and that he's picking up the phone and he's trying to maximize a deal if he's going to deal him. Again, we don't know what the Red Sox approach is going to be at the trade deadline as of right now. My guess is they're going to be probably low sellers, you know, nothing crazy, but Jansen's probably going to go, you know, guys with expiring contracts. Chris Martin will probably go. You know, Nick Pivetta might be part of that group. And maybe he's part of a larger trade package, you know, like we mentioned. Maybe it's Pivetta and Dom Smith going somewhere and you get a top 10 prospect in return. Who knows? But right now he's pitching lights out. And yeah, he's probably going to have a start here somewhere down the road, especially with this schedule where he gets roughed up a little bit. But for the most part, he's dependable. He stays healthy. He is valuable to you, but he's going to be really valuable to someone else. And that's where it's going to get difficult here in the coming months.
There are only two acceptable outcomes come August: an extension for Pivetta, or you trade him. It makes absolutely no sense where this roster is to just let the deal expire and get nothing. It makes no sense. So you either see value in the player moving forward, you sign him to a 2-year, $18 million deal, or you trade him. That's it. Those are the options. There's no way he's pitching for this ball club in September unless he's extended.
Well, the good news is Heim Bloom's not here anymore, so he's not going to freeze at the deadline like he did when he should have traded Nathan Eovaldi.
Well, we don't know that yet, Terry. I appreciate the optimism. It's very unlike you, but we don't know that yet.
I will make a serious wager that that he won't just be kept just to walk. But a couple things real quick. I'm going to get back to the deadline, but Tanner Houck, an 8.65 strikeout per nine. Nick Pivetta, just under 11. So when I talk about dominance, like that's it. An 11 strikeout per nine, that's elite. There's probably, I'm guessing, maybe 3, 4, 5 at the most in all of Major League Baseball that are probably higher than that. Starters, I mean, relievers can get up to like 15 Matt Barnes did that 1 year, but yeah. And then as far as the deadline goes, Pivetta is the only guy who hasn't killed his value. I mean, you're not getting much for Tyler O'Neill. Chris Martin, I mean, I feel bad for the guy. He was put on the injured list today, because he's been struggling with anxiety. So, I mean, his health is more important than anything, but not necessarily a guy we could be trading at this point. And I think Kenley right now, you're going to get something. It might not be, you know, it might not blow you away, but I think teams will want him. And he'll only be owed, I think, let's see, a third of $16 million. So $5 million and change is what he'll be owed over the last few months. So we'll see what happens there.
Jeremy, you mentioned that, you know, with Pivetta, it's either he's traded or you extend him. So hypothetically, so he's 31 years old, he'll be 32 probably at some point, and he's closing in on 1,000 innings on his career. If he wants anything more than a 2-year extension, do you give it to him? And let's say the money's not crazy, right? Let's say he's not asking for top line starting pitching money. Let's say that he wants to stay. He wants to stay in Boston, takes a little bit of a discount, but he wants 3+ years. You do it.
The answer is maybe based on the structure of the deal. So I wouldn't have a problem with the next 2 years and a third year club option if he throws 130 innings. Something like that. I would be fine with the flexibility offered by that type of structure. I'm not guaranteeing any more than 2 years. I don't think the Red Sox have an appetite for that, so I'm not too worried about it. But if you make some sort of contingent deal based on availability or success, then, I mean, if in his year 33, he throws 158 innings, 3.3 ERA, you're going to want him for at least one more year, right?
Yep. Yep. Terry, how about you?
Yeah, so this is my favorite thing, and I, you know, I'm fairly decent at it. You know, trying to figure out what his market would be, and I think Zach Eflin of the Rays is a very good comp. He got 3 years, $45 million. That's what I thought Jordan Montgomery, you know, would go for before that World Series run. So I think that's the neighborhood. Chris Bassett was probably a bit of an overpay, 3 years, $60 million. You know, different makeup as well. So that's probably not even the best comp anyway. Shota Imanaga basically got a 3-year deal, guaranteed deal for about 45-50 million. He's got a couple of weird options. I forget how those trigger. It's not a typical contract, but I think that's what he's looking at. That's affordable. That's a contract the Red Sox could afford, but there's no precedence in them doing that post Dombrowski. Has anybody gotten a 2-year deal besides that weird Paxton deal where they bought out the Tommy John year? Giolito got what, 1 year guaranteed, but certain things to trigger the second and even a third year. So there's been no 2-year guaranteed deals, let's put it that way, for Red Sox starting pitching.
Yeah, it would certainly be interesting to see if he does stay, what an extension would look like, but I tend to lean towards, I think he's probably getting dealt. So we'll see how all that goes. We got some time between now and then. So with that, we'll move to our top number one observation from this Brave series. Terry, take us home. What do we got?
Cutter Crawford is back. And this is the Cutter Crawford we were familiar with before that insane start. He's given up 15 earned runs in his last three starts. There's been some unearned runs mixed in there as well. There were two of them in this start, but had his normal sideways inning, put a couple of runners on, and then Ozzie Albies just hit I don't know how you would describe it. Off the bat, it just looked so pretty, and it landed in the home bullpen. And that basically put the game out of reach at that point. It was 6-3. We ended up tacking on a couple more, or the Braves, I should say. I swear I'm not a Braves agent on here, but just not a good outing. It was just a continuation of him going sideways at certain points. He doesn't have a plus fastball, and when you don't have a plus fastball, I get really pessimistic. We've seen Cooper Criswell be up and down because of that, and teams that are pretty good at hitting off-speed stuff, I think they're going to feast on this guy, unfortunately. So, I mean, he's probably a number four, number five starter on most teams. And we desperately need him to be a number two to make this season work. And that's just not realistic. So we'll see. He broke down last year in August. I don't know if that'll happen for a second year in a row. I'd like to think he's kind of going to be a little bit more built up for it this time around. But not a great outing, and with the teams we're about to face, I don't see it improving anytime soon.
Jeremy.
So it's not all bad. He goes six innings, doesn't kill the bullpen, especially because Anderson was able to come in and get the last nine outs. We've kind of had the same conversation about Cutter Crawford the last couple of episodes that I was on anyways. One of the things I found interesting, I haven't tried to find the quote to read it right now, but my recollection is that Cora mentioned that Sunday is going to become a bullpen game to push the rotation back. Last week, I mentioned skipping a start altogether and just giving them effectively 9 days in between starts. I think I'd rather go that route than just push them back a day. And I'd like to reset them and see what happens and go from there. I guess Cora believes that pushing the entire rotation back one day is going to be a benefit to multiple people. So I get why he's doing it if that's what he ends up doing. But something needs to change. You can't keep letting him go out there and do the same thing over and over again. He's healthy, so I don't see an IL trip. But I don't think all is lost on the player. I really don't. He's still pitching deep in games. He's just having a bad inning. The Smith inning, which I highlighted earlier, was largely not his fault. So, you know, I just think a break, maybe even if you can get him a lead early in the game and get him out after five innings and 68 pitches, where you can just kind of manage his stress level a little bit and let him get back to somewhere. He's never going to go back to 1.2 ERA with a 0.6 whip, but you know, give him a chance to take a deep breath. You know, he's been a steady guy in the rotation, hasn't missed a start. I think it's time to give him some flexibility and some time off.
Yeah, I'm not hitting the panic button on Cutter Crawford just yet, but if that panic button is like one of those old cartoony ones that has like the glass thing covering it, I'm at least lifting the glass thing and considering it. Because I agree that I think pushing him back and giving him a rest or giving him a start off will help him. We talked about it going into this season that he's one of those guys that his innings limit is going to skyrocket, or I'm sorry, his innings that he's going to pitch is going to skyrocket this year compared to what he's done throughout the rest of his career. So that's definitely a concern, but I do think there's some regression in there as well. He's leaving more pitches out over the plate. His stuff's getting tattooed a lot more. I think hitters are starting to figure him out a little bit. So I don't think every start is going to be as bad as this last one, but I do think that you see him sort of sliding back to what I projected he would be, which is a low-end number three, high-end number four. That's what I think he is. I don't think he's a number two, and he's definitely not a number one. He just doesn't have the stuff for it. Doesn't mean that he's not still valuable. Doesn't mean that he doesn't deserve a spot in your rotation. He absolutely does. And up until this point, you know, the month of April, he was fantastic. The month of May, he's gone backwards. So, and his first start in June was a disaster. So let's see. Let's see how the rest of June goes. He's going to have some tough competition, some tough lineups to face. But if giving him a rest and kind of managing him a little bit helps in any way, then that's great. And hopefully he can get back to a little bit of what he was doing in April. I don't think he'll go all the way back. I think that, again, he's going to sort of, you know, float and kind of slide into that number three, number four role. But that's okay. That's, you know, as long as he's not a disaster out there, that's fine. And he is still able to go deep into games for the most part. So, again, not hammering the panic button yet, but I do want to see, especially if they do a bullpen game on Sunday, you give him the White Sox series off, you give him, you know, a couple of extra days, how does he look through the rest of June? Does he look better? Or are we going to be having the same conversation on July 1st, where we're looking at Crawford's June and going, oh boy, he went all the way backwards? Because then you've got to think about what is, you know, what do you do with him? What's his future really with this club? And, you know, as a starter, all of that stuff. Hopefully it doesn't get to that point. I don't think that it will. I think ultimately he figures it out a little bit, settles down, and, you know, at least steadies himself for the course of the remainder of the season. But I don't think you're going to see what you saw in April again from him. I think that was not a fluke, but I think that was a blip on the radar where he just came out of the gates firing, and then hitters started to figure him out. The league started to figure him out. The book might be out on him now. And you're seeing a little bit of regression because of that.
The book's not out on him. His pitch location has been terrible. He's missing in the middle of the plate way too often. And the Albies home run was a perfect example of that. It's not middle, but it's like middle a little bit up. And that guy's a good hitter in that spot where, and again, he's not going to be what he was in April, but players get hot and play out over their ski poles for a period of time. It happens in all sports, you know, and sometimes it happens in a big game like a Super Bowl or a World Series or something. And was it Pierce is a perfect example the year we won, where he won the MVP out of absolutely nowhere. That wasn't the player he was. They gave him a year extension. He regressed back to normal and we're like, what did we do here? Like, there's nothing wrong with the fact that he was hot in that month and it shouldn't be held against him. I'm just telling you, he needs a break. His pitch location has been terrible. And to his detriment, instead of missing outside the strike zone and walking people where there's a chance for less harm, he's missing middle, and he's getting smoked. So, you know, I just think he's tired and fatigued. And I think if you give him a break, and I would personally just skip a start, I think you find him to come back a little bit sharper. He's not going to be April Cutter Crawford, but he could be 3-2, 6-7 inning Cutter Crawford, 2-3, you know, quality starts, 2-3 earned runs and keeping in games.
Few things here. In April, he gave up 0 home runs, 0 in 6 starts. His first start in May was on May 1st, and from there forward, in 6 of his next 7 starts, he gave up a homer. Now, if you want to say good news somewhere, he's never given up more than 1 in a game, but he's been prone to them. Secondly, looking at his innings pitched, last year he pitched 129 and a third, but the breakdown started around 100. He lost 3 or 4 miles an hour velocity on his fastball, and they still kept pitching him, though. He still made all his starts despite that. There was no injury. He was just tired, and we didn't have anybody, so they threw him out there anyway. I don't think they viewed him at that time as a vital part of the plan going forward, but he kind of became that after this dud of a free agency winter we had. So, like I said, started breaking down at about 100 innings last year. He's at 74 right now. So he'll be to 100 by the end of June, and probably 105, 110 maybe. Now, it's fine if you want to not start him in that White Sox game, and he would have pitched the finale on Sunday. Monday's an off day. So I'm assuming, and it could change between now and then, he's probably going to go game one next week. Guess who that's against?
That's the Phillies, isn't it?
That's the Phillies.
Ooh.
After that, assuming things don't change and he pitches 5 days later, he's going to pitch the finale of the Yankees series. So while I agree, he desperately needs to at least be pushed back a little, or maybe Jeremy's plan is better, because then you're only facing, if you're skipping a full start, he won't pitch against the Phillies. He would pitch against the Yankees and then maybe the Blue Jays, depending on how that shakes out. But it just doesn't look good right now for Cutter Crawford. And I don't trust the manager to get it right. So it is what it is.
At the end of the day, if he needs a rest in early June so that he can be there for you in late July, August, when, I mean, we'll see what this team's doing, but if you're even sniffing a wild card spot at that point, then you're going to need him to go out there and give you six innings of, you know, at least quality baseball. Like Jeremy said, even if you just give up two or three runs, that's fine. So if they need to, you know, give him a blow now, do it now. You know, skip a couple, you know, skip a start or two. Although I don't envy him because, yeah, like you say, he's got the Phillies and the Yankees waiting for him. So it will be a real test to see if he can bounce back against those lineups. But, I mean, geez, skip a start against the lowly White Sox and then, yeah, come on back against the two best teams in baseball. Two of the best offenses, too. So that will certainly be interesting for him. So with that, we will wrap it up there. Keep an eye out for our Bastards series prediction show. We'll be predicting the White Sox series coming up this weekend. And we have another episode of Clown Takes coming your way this weekend as well. We'll be talking a little bit about Rafael Devers. You may have noticed that we didn't exactly put him on our five observations here. We're going to do a whole episode regarding Rafael Devers because a certain member of the Boston media wants to trade him away, which certainly perked up our ears a little bit. So we're going to be diving into that. So keep an eye out for that episode as well. Everyone have a very good weekend, and we'll talk to you later. Take care.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as 1 day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. LeafHome.com/water.